Amélie was letting it go. She was a good woman, a good friend, and in another life, Six would have liked to have gotten to know her better. She would miss her. But now she had her, so she smiled back. Let's. Without her having to ask, Stellan slid out, as did Ollie. But it was only Stellan who said,
Enjoy. The men will keep the booth warm for when you return.
Six exited her seat and saw Lee already out, reaching a hand toward her. She took it and refused to look back at the man who slid out of the booth to let her free without her even asking. The man she loved. The man she had sat beside for the first time in their place, and would return to when she and Amélie were done. As Lee tucked Six's hand in the crook of her arm and headed them toward the playrooms. As they walked, Lee leaned her head Six's way and said conspiratorially,
It's good Ollie's not coming. If Talia does something inspired, later he won't know I'm copying her.
Thank you. Six said in reply. Amélie stopped with her hand on the door to the playrooms and looked at Six, not hiding her confusion.
For what?
For being you, Six explained. The confusion fled, and Lee gave her a small smile that was both concerned and sad, but she didn't get into either. She replied,
I can hardly say you're welcome for that.
Then don't, Six said. Put her hand on the door, too, and pushed through, taking Lee with her. They moved through the hallways connected, two mistresses, two friends, enjoying a night at their club together. A memory Six would take with her. A memory Six knew she'd be glad she had, for the time when she wouldn't be making memories like this at all. The ride home was silent. Stellan was who he was. Therefore he knew she needed that. And he gave her that. After they walked into the laundry room and he guided her down the hall, Stellan, being who he was, gave her more. Stopping her outside his study, he looked down at her, lifted a hand to cup her jaw, and she watched his face in the darkened corridor coming close to hers. When he was a breath away, he said gently,
Go to your sketchbooks, honey. I'll be waiting for you in bed.
With nothing more, he touched his mouth to hers, let her go, and she watched his tall, shadowy figure move gracefully away, wondering if she knew him as well as he knew her. And she realized she did. For instance, she knew he did not let whatever happened during his days get to him. He talked about it. But even if it frustrated or annoyed him, he shared only that it did. Other than that, he left it at the office when he came home to her. And then he was just home with her, giving her all of him, taking everything she'd give in return. She further knew he understood his past and how bleak it was, and he'd found a way to live with it, not against it. And last, she knew, for reasons she did not understand, he was falling in love with her. On this thought, Six moved directly to the library where she'd hidden her current sketch pad and pencils, in a place Stellan wouldn't find, though she'd already learned he wouldn't look, even if she left them out, but M might. But when she retrieved them, she didn't go to a chair or his desk in his study, or out by the pool. She went to a corner of the room, turned, sank to her ass on the floor, held the sketch pad tight against her chest with her thighs, and she stared in the dark. That day she'd taken a woman's multivitamin bought specifically for her. And she'd fall asleep beside Stellan that night. Alone, solitary, safe, unable to hold them back any longer, the tears came slow at first. One chased leisurely by another. And then they came faster. In the end, she had to shove her face in her knees and endure the pain it caused as she held back the noises, just in case Stellan came looking for her, her shoulders and back and chest and ribs heaving with the effort.
I want to be normal, she whispered brokenly to her knees.
You've always wanted to be normal, her mind reminded her. You'll never be normal. But he doesn't want normal. He wants you. He's not normal, not nearly normal, and you want him. She wanted him. She wanted him. And she wanted them.
We'll have our drink and go home.
Behind her squeezed shut eyes, she saw him there, sitting close to her in a booth at the Honey, her safe place, their place, holding her hand, knowing from the time they walked in to the time she fixed her lipstick and returned to him that something had happened. She needed to leave, and he was going to make that so.
This morning it's my famous French toast for my baby girl.
Her head shot up, and she pushed herself off the floor. She hurried to her hiding place, stashed the sketchbook and pens, and dashed her hands on her face to clear away the tears as she moved out the door. She noted Stellan's timers had lit her way with a lamp at the base of the stairs, which she turned off, and one in the hall, which she also turned off. She hit the bedroom and saw Stellan in bed, sitting up against the headboard, covers to his waist, chest exposed, book in his hand. He looked up the minute she entered the room. She twisted her arms behind her to pull the zipper down on the little red leather mini-dress she was wearing. He put his book aside on the nightstand and watched her make her way toward him. She drew the dress off her shoulders at the front, let it drop, and stepped out of it, all with only a moment's hesitation in stepping over it when it hit the floor, as she continued toward him up the steps to his side of the bed, wearing nothing but a barely there red bralette made of see-through lace and a pair of black pumps with thin ankle straps.
Darling, he said quietly, gaze on her face, not her body.
She didn't stop moving, even at the side of the bed. She threw the covers off him and saw he was ready for bed and also ready for her. He was naked and hard.
Lord God, so beautiful.
She put a knee to the bed and swung the other leg around, straddling him. His hands went to the backs of her thighs. Her hands went to his wrists, pulling them away, lifting them over his head, pinning them to the headboard, her eyes looking directly into his. She saw them flash.
Simone, he whispered.
She lowered herself on him, rubbing her wetness against the underside of his rigid shaft. His jaw tightened, his eyes darkened, and his voice roughened when he repeated,
Simone.
Yes, Six knew him. She also knew his body. So she bent to it, putting her mouth to him, going to places that she'd learned were responsive. The skin under his ear, the expanse where his head met his neck. And down. His nipples were sensitive. If he was ever at her command, she'd manipulate them for hours, torturing him with it. She moved to them, pulling his hands down slightly so she could hold them away, but pressing her weight into them as she did so, he'd get her message. She felt his fingers ball into fists, but he allowed her to hold him as she worked his nipples, licking, sucking, scraping the edge of her teeth down them, feeling his body respond, hearing the low masculine purrs drift up his throat, his hands tensing and flexing in her hold. She moved further down, over the ridges of his abs, to where he liked her best, where any man was most sensitive.
Simone, he groaned.
She kept going, having to release his hands to do it. He spread his legs, her body slipped through. His fingers slid into her hair and he whispered,
Darling.
She took up his shaft, then swallowed it deep, thrilling when his resulting grunt drove up her pussy. Six again grasped his hands, pulling his fingers out of her hair and pushing them into the bed by his hips as she sucked him off relentlessly, dragging hard, moving fast, seeing his legs cock up reflexively at her sides,
taking his thrusts as his fingers wrapped around her wrists and her work forced him to move. She let him fuck her face, because that was what he wanted, what he needed. And while he had her, she would give him anything, everything, all she had to give. Six did this, until it was time to give more. She drew deep as she pulled him out, then surged up over his body, taking his wrists with her, pinning them again to the headboard. Catching his heated, frustrated, beautiful blue gaze, she transferred his wrists to one hand, reached between them, wrapped her fingers around his cock, positioned him, and then plunged down on him fast and hard. His eyes narrowed dangerously and he hissed through his teeth. She started riding him, staring into blue. Holding her gaze, his wrists moved in her fingers, but Six replaced her other hand there, pushing both of his into the headboard with as much of her weight as she could use, and all of her strength as she rode him fast, squeezing him with her pussy as she went, her breaths escalating, his going uneven.
"I want to touch you,"
he growled. She said nothing, just kept moving on him, milking him, fucking him quick and hard. She felt his hands flex, then form into fists again, but he didn't break her hold as he demanded.
"At least kiss me."
Six didn't. She held contact with his gaze, riding him rough, merciless.
"Simone," he warned low.
Her breath was coming with difficulty, her focus shifting from what she was giving him to what she was giving herself. She kept at him, but had to drop her forehead to his, their connection there rolling, as she drove herself down on him again and again, taking him, refocusing where she needed to be. Only giving to him.
"Six,"
he bit off, pressing his forehead into hers, and she saw it beginning.
"For you,"
she whispered, "just you."
"God damn it, Six,"
he groaned. His head snapping back with nowhere to go, it slammed against the headboard, and Six kept moving on him, working him, taking him through his orgasm. When he was done, she settled, full of him, and his head slid down the side of hers so his forehead rested on her shoulder. She closed her eyes and memorized that moment to commit to her sketchpad later. When she had, Six let his wrists go. His hands immediately moved to grab her, but she was quicker. She swung off, disconnecting them, exiting the bed. She walked to the bathroom and cleaned up. She walked into the closet and took off her bralette and shoes, pulling on a shapeless t-shirt nightie. She walked out of the closet, back into the bathroom. She cleaned her face, brushed her teeth, turned out the light, and surprisingly, found the bedroom dark when she entered it. But then again, it wasn't surprising. Stellan would guess that was what she would need. So he made it so. Six pulled back the covers and got into bed, settling on her side only to be drawn directly into Stellan's body. She closed her eyes and braced.
"I get it,"
he said into the back of her hair, tightening his hold on her, pulling her closer, molding her back to his front.
"I understand now."
He'd never understand. He was too strong, too right, too good, too beautiful. He could lose his parents and go on. He could lose his sister and go on. He would lose her and go on.
"In your scenes? Why, it's always about them, your subs,"
he continued.
"Why you barely touch them. Why you let yourself have nothing. It seems you're detached, removed, indifferent. But you aren't, my darling, are you? What it is for any good dom goes doubly for you, doesn't it, Simone? You're giving them exactly what they want. Entirely focused on giving them precisely what they need. Sacrificing your own needs to hone in with utter absorption. To give to them what they want the most. That isn't a disconnect. The reason they're begging for it is that they've never had it so good. I need to sleep now, Stellan, she replied. If you ever need that again, Six, you ask me to the couch. Another room, lead me to the playroom, but not in our bed. In our bed, you climax, even if it's eventually. Six and Simone sleep at my side, but only Simone fucks me in this bed, including when I have to break through Six to get to her. Is that understood? It was very much understood in a number of ways, including that he would give that to her again if she needed it. He'd do anything for her. Even take an orgasm, it was she who would not allow him to return, instead of the other way around. He gave her a squeeze. Simone, is that understood? It's understood, she mumbled. His arm loosened, somewhat. She lay in his hold and stared in the dark. What made you cry? He whispered. Of course he didn't miss that. Then again, she hadn't hidden it. I'm in love with you. Simone, sweetheart, what made you cry? He repeated when she did not answer out loud. I never want to leave you. I want to stay forever and knock myself out to make you happy. Stellan burrowed his face in her hair and murmured, That's all right, honey. You don't have to answer. Of course she didn't. I'll get you there, he promised quietly. No, you won't. And when you're there, I'll make you happy. That isn't the goal. If that was to happen, it would need to be the other way around. He'd want you to be happy, Simone, he said gently. That had her shutting her eyes tight. This morning is my famous French toast for my baby girl. Please stop talking, she begged. All right, darling, he murmured. Stellan held her. Six let him. He did not fall asleep before her. And she did not fall asleep before she prepared herself mentally and knew when the next day dawned she could endure. 2 weeks and 5 days. Then the torture would be over. For Stellan. 15. Rare Slices of Perfection. 6.
I get that you have a life. I'm glad that you have a life. It's fantastic to learn a friend of mine is part of that life. Stellan is a good man, and I see good things for the two of you. Now that you're seeing each other, I realize I should have thought to set you up with the guy. You're perfect for him. And honestly, I knew the good stuff had to end eventually. A woman like you wouldn't be able to give us 24/7 forever. But you need to let us know if we need another investigator, Six. Even if part-time or on contract, I'll make it clear your position is not in jeopardy. You're allowed to have a life. We've enjoyed having you available to us, like we've been able to utilize you for longer than we should have, frankly. But the work still has to get done, and we're up against a wall with this one and we've got nothing to go on.
Six sat opposite her boss in his office, and even though he was telling her she was falling down on the job, what she heard repeated in her head was,
I actually should have thought to set you up with the guy. You're perfect for him.
How did you know about me and Stellan? She asked, and Joel Trebek's eyebrows went up.
Sorry, was it a secret?
He asked back. No, I just hadn't shared about us in the office.
In fact, Six didn't share anything at the office, and not just because she rarely came to the office. So she definitely had not shared that.
He nodded.
Yes, but you were at Stake 44 with him last week. A mutual acquaintance saw you, spoke briefly with Stellan, he introduced you. His wife told my wife, who told me.
Of course. Six got them back on track. The trial with this guy starts Wednesday? Joel nodded again.
And we have nothing, But there can't be nothing to find. You did the computer work, it's not there. That tells me, if there's something to be had, it's going to take field work.
I'm on it, she told him. If there's something to get, you'll have it by Monday. At that, Joel shook his head.
Six, we've contracted with outside investigators before. We can pull one in on this. You knew this wasn't a 9-to-5 job when you took it, but you've gone above and beyond since you started with us. If you need some time...
I don't need time. She drew in a breath and did something she'd never done in her life with any employer. Not that she had many legitimate ones before Joel. She invoked her personal life into her professional one.
I'll speak with Stellan. He'll understand.
She said it, but she wasn't sure that was true.
Stellan would give her anything, and she wouldn't renege on the dinner the next evening with his Susan. But she was going to have to put in the work, nights and weekends. And she had a feeling with the full court press he was doing to get her to believe, he wasn't going to like it. Especially weekends.
Joel gave her a close look.
You're sure?
Stellan gets it. And he gets me. He'll get this, she replied. Joel smiled.
Great. But if you need an assist, give me a heads up. We'll get it for you.
That was not going to happen. She partnered up only rarely, and when she did, there were only three people she'd do that with. Carlo, Sylvie, or Tucker. Joel might be cool with contracting with Sylvie or Tucker. Carlo would scare the holy hell out of him.
Best get on this, she muttered, rising from her chair. Tell Stellan I said hello, and we should get together for a drink or a meal. I'll talk to Tammy, we'll set something up.
Dinner or drinks with her boss, his wife, and Six's man. How very normal.
Yikes.
Six nodded, lifted a hand in a wave, and walked out of the office. Not wondering how she'd let work slide, considering she always went balls to the wall, day or night, for whatever job she was on. She didn't have the or night part of that, being with Stellan. What she wondered was how she let an assignment slide so badly, her boss had to chat with her about it. He was being cool, and that had to do with the fact that she was good at what she did, and he knew it. However, it also could have to do with the fact she was with Stellan, and they were buds. But she'd been so focused on Stellan, nights with him, dinner with him, going to bed with him, having their weekend together. She'd blown off work. That wasn't like her, and she needed this job. At least until she took off. But if she decided to go totally legit, she'd need the reference. This is good, she told herself as she walked through the offices, making eye contact, dipping her chin or lifting it to secretaries and paralegals or whoever they were that she passed. Staff whose names she didn't know. And didn't make any effort to know or remember if she learned them, unless she was working a job for the attorney they worked for. And she thought this was good, because she could fight Stellan's all-out offensive with this, an excuse he couldn't really counter for her to have time away from him. Them. And if he did counter it, she had ammunition to fight another way, because for real, normal people in the real, normal world, it was absolutely not cool for some guy to ask his woman to put her job in jeopardy to spend time with him. In fact, she decided as she tagged the button for the elevator, Stellan's office was on the next block, so she'd go there now, killing two birds with one stone, since she'd have to be on the job that night and thus away from him. They should have this out sooner rather than later. But also, Susan worked for him. She'd be there. And Six could meet her before tomorrow night, take the edge off, show the woman what she'd be dealing with. And then tomorrow night she'd just have to deal with the husband and the kid. Perfect, if she still had to deal with the husband and the kid. She rode the elevator down, left the building,
and was sure to take her sunglasses out of her metallic silver envelope clutch and slide them on, even though she only had to walk half a block and cross a street to get to the terrazzo-covered forecourt of the skyscraper that Stellan not only owned, but also conducted his business. That business taking up two floors. The Phoenix sun was blinding on its own, but bouncing off buildings and pavements, it was killer. When she arrived in Stellan's building and again took off her sunglasses and tucked them away, she noted there was a security guy you had to pass, unless you had a card to get through the secure, automated half-gates that led to the elevator bay. Six tucked her clutch under her arm, walked right up to him, told him her name and who she wanted to see. He'd done a top-to-toe as she walked up, and did two top-to-tits over the high partition of his desk as he asked, "You got an appointment?" "He'll see me," she replied. The guard gave her a look that said he didn't doubt it, and picked up the phone. Not 2 minutes later, he was reaching for a drawer, nodding, muttering, right. He hung up, slid the card he got from his drawer across the high shelf at the top of his desk toward her, and said, "Use that. It's a temporary pass. They say they'll set you up with a permanent one up at Mr. Lang's office." She wanted to snatch up the card and hold it to her chest, like the boy she'd had a crush on in high school out of the blue gave her a rose after class. Six did not do this. She just took the card, lifted it up, murmured, "Thanks," and walked to the security stanchions, slipping in the card and moving through the gates when they opened. She thanked God for long-wearing lipstick when she hit Stellan's floor and saw the wide-sweeping reception desk made of a gleaming wave of undulating wood that was adorned with two enormous bouquets of fresh flowers in the wide-sweeping, elegant reception area. A desk that was not being manned only by a receptionist. Instead, it was populated by a receptionist, four loitering women, and an equally loitering guy. News had gotten out the boss's woman was on her way up. All eyes came to her. As she walked across the marble flooring toward the desk, in simple but kick-ass, high-heeled, black patent Louboutin Soquette pumps. She was wearing a silvery-gray leather pencil skirt that fit her like a glove and hit her at the knees. She was also wearing a skin-tight, silk-knit, sleeveless mock turtleneck tee. Her only adornment was her square-faced Michelle watch and a pair of small diamond studs in her ears. Really, the skirt and shoes were all she needed. And the bugged-out eyes fastened to her proved that to be true. "I'm here to see Stellan," she shared with the receptionist when she arrived at her desk. "Sorry," she went on, belatedly realizing who she was speaking to. "Mr. Lang."
Obviously,
she stammered, clearly unable to cope with Stellan Lang's girlfriend showing up in her sphere. Six heard from the side. "Allow me to put Maureen out of her misery and take you back." She looked that way to see a very pretty, petite, blonde, well-dressed woman who had a knowing smile on her face and a measuring look in her eye. The glorious Susan. God, she even looked like the perfect baby sister you lived to adore. Six inwardly drew her shit tight, gave a small smile to the receptionist and her other onlookers, and moved toward the blonde. "You're Susan, yes?" she asked, lifting her hand when she got close.
"I am, and you're Simone."
That threw Six for a second, so much she let it show.
"Six,"
Susan said quickly.
"Six, sorry."
"No apology needed, Simone is fine," Six told her as Susan took her hand, gave it a firm squeeze, and they both let go. "I was in the neighborhood, and I had something I needed to share with Stellan, so I figured I'd just pop by. Am I being a nuisance?"
"No,
absolutely not," Susan assured. "Though he's on a call and told me he didn't want to be disturbed.
Susan was speaking as she indicated a hall to Six with a swing of her arm, and they both began to walk down it. I haven't shared you were here yet, as he should be wrapping it up soon. And I suspect he'll do that, even if he wasn't wrapping it up, when we poke our heads through to show him you're here. I don't want to bother him or you. What I have to share shouldn't take long. That was a partial lie. It might. She had no idea how Stellan would react or how long that would take. I can call him and leave a message on his cell. I was just a block away, though, so I thought. Susan cut her off. No worries. All good. In fact, you here will make his day. Six examined the well-appointed hall, off of which were large rooms filled with well-appointed cubbies. Sprinkled around were fabulous art and more fresh flower arrangements. She was taking this all in, despite the fact she was not quite able not to think about making Stellan's day. But for her sanity, she wanted to. I'm glad we have a chance to meet anyway, Susan went on, and Six looked to her. Take the pressure off tomorrow night? Six had never met anyone that mattered to a beau. She'd never even had a beau. And most of the people she dealt with, nothing mattered to them but power and money. It hadn't occurred to her Susan might be on edge, too. Right. So I'll give you the honesty and share. That was also behind me walking a block in 107-degree heat in a leather skirt to have a word with Stellan, Six admitted, as Susan led them into a well-appointed office that was large, had comfortable seating around, and a huge desk filled with what appeared to be lots of work scattered on top, as well as one of the bigger, fresh flower arrangements at the corner of it. That skirt is something else, to be sure, Susan replied, stopped in front of her desk and looked up at Six. How do you wear leather in the summer in Phoenix? Like every other Phoenician, I limit my time outside in the summer to racing from the air conditioning of a building to the air conditioning in my car and vice versa. So it really doesn't matter what I wear, since most of the time I'm enjoying a soothing 70-something degrees. And if I spend any time outside, it's in a bathing suit by a pool. No leather to be found. Susan gave her a big smile. Too true. Six hesitantly returned the smile. So, I'm just going to say, since we're being honest, Susan began, I figured you'd be daunting, the woman who caught Stellan's eye. Well, you know, meeting you, you're not daunting. You're terrifying. Oh, no. I'm not, really. It's the leather. It's a power material, Six tried to joke. It is that. But it's also the fact you walked a block, or anywhere, in those shoes. I'd break an ankle, or fall flat on my face. You can best anything with practice. That's how I did it. I sucked at ballet, so I'm thinking you're wrong. Six gave her a less hesitant smile and lowered her voice to share. I'm just a person, Susan. I'm no different from you or anyone else. You look like the famous ex-wife of a rock god who dumped his butt the minute she found out he cheated on her, proving he's the most idiotic man on the planet and unworthy of her time. Then she went on to get more famous just for being awesome, but also building a designer handbag dynasty. At the same time, she tamed an until then untamable, unspeakably handsome and glamorous playboy, earning his utter devotion and a $150,000 custom-designed wedding gown to top the 5-carat diamond engagement ring he slid on her finger aboard his yacht. Six blinked at her. I don't know about the rock god part, Susan went on, but I know the second part is true, and so is the last part, since Stellan's already told me I can pick your engagement ring. And I'm seeing from taking in all that is you that 5 carats is the way to go. At hearing those words, unable to stop herself, Six reached out with her fingers to Susan's desk and leaned into them, staring at the woman and trying with everything she had not to hyperventilate. Oh, God,
I freaked you,
Susan whispered in horror. I'm a mess, Six whispered back. So off kilter from what Susan had just said, not to mention being the recipient of such open honesty, unable to stop that too.
You're the most put-together woman I've ever seen,
Susan kept up the whispering. Camouflage. I don't believe that.
It's true.
I still don't believe it. He's going to give up on me, Six shared, yes, also still whispering.
I'm such a mess. I'm going to make that so. He never gives up on anything that matters to him.
Susan was still whispering in return.
And you really matter to him.
Then I'm going to have to leave him before I hurt him. Susan suddenly looked panicked.
Leaving him would hurt him.
You don't understand.
It's like dragons for you,
Susan declared desperately. Six shut her mouth.
He would. He would, she said like she was chanting, leaned in, and continued fiercely. Let him.
Six took a step back, looked side to side, realized what the fuck she was doing, and opened her mouth to find a way out of the mess she'd somehow created. Seriously. This was Stellan's Susan. She couldn't talk to Lee, but she could know Susan for all the 5 minutes and let this vomit out of her mouth?
My dad's a dick, excuse my language, Susan declared suddenly. And my mom let him be that to me. So outside of Harry and Crosby, Stellan's all I've got that's mine. And there isn't a single woman on the planet I think was worthy of him. Not one. That was, I thought that until I just met you.
Six shook her head. You don't know me.
I know why he's falling in love with you.
Six clamped her mouth shut again. Do you want to know why? Susan asked. Because he likes a challenge? Six asked in return.
Because you're the only woman on this planet who wants him for nothing but him. Even the part of him that wants nothing but to love you.
Six looked to Susan's desk, mumbling. Sam, I'm going to cry.
Oh, God, don't do that, Susan exclaimed, lifting a hand and curling her fingers around Six's upper arm. He'll think I made you cry and he'll get ticked at me.
Six looked at her, shaking her head. He'll know it's not you. I've been on edge lately. Susan nodded knowingly, taking her hand.
Weirdly, impending happiness does that to you. I honestly would not allow myself to think Harry was real. I mean, the sweet, cute guy thought I was funny and adorable. I got this big smile on his face any time he saw me. What was wrong with him? Didn't he see what my dad saw in me? This big, fat loser who got B's on a report card and lost the race to win class secretary? That, right there, was a double fail. I should have run for president, and won, hands down. A B isn't bad, Six pointed out. Not for my dad. For my dad, it was the end of the world, and proof positive he'd produced a huge dunce, Susan replied. You do know that's more than a little bit crazy, Six shared. Susan gave her a close look that communicated a lot of things and said, I didn't until Harry. And Stellan. God. Stellan believed in her, too. And look at her now. Six couldn't handle that. Instead, she went on, and that class officer stuff is just a popularity contest. He could be equally pissed you didn't win prom queen. He was ticked at that, too.
What a douche, Six decreed.
Word,
Susan agreed. They looked at each other. Then, as one, they burst out laughing so hard, both of them had to lean against the desk to hold themselves up. Still laughing, Susan eyed the door to her office, and Six looked that way to see someone scurrying down the hall.
I freaking love this, Susan stated,
and Six turned back to her to see her daintily wiping away tears of hilarity from under her eyes so as not to disturb her mascara.
What?
Six asked, pulling herself together, thinking she'd never noticed it, but laughing did a lot toward taking the heavy and making it light again.
You being absolutely fabulous.
Of course, this means my life will be hell, because everyone will want the gossip. But seriously, what more can I say? All questions are answered with just you showing here. You're edgy, awesome, amazing, and Stellan is Stellan. It was meant to be.
Six tried to ignore that so she didn't lose it again.
Six found it impossible to ignore that.
I really am a mess, Six told her quietly.
Join the club, babe,
Susan replied airily, then flicked a wrist toward her doorway. They'll never know that, because I will never share, on threat of death. She crossed her heart, then held up two fingers. But for me, I can now avoid the inferiority complex I've been gearing up to nurture until my dying day. You do know. He adores you with every fiber of his being. And when he said we were having dinner tomorrow night, I nearly vomited on the spot, Six shared.
Susan burst out laughing, and Six couldn't help it. It was laugh, cry, or scream, and laughing seemed to work great. So she took the path of least resistance and laughed with her. It was then she heard a door open, one of the double ones at the side of Susan's office.
Susan twisted her neck to look over her shoulder, and Six just looked over Susan's shoulder. Thus, they both saw Stellan standing there. No jacket, blue tie, light gray vest, fabulous striped shirt, tailored light gray trousers, fantastic brown shoes, brows raised, lips quirked. Gorgeous.
Hey, boss man, Susan called. Surprise visit from your cool chick.
As she's standing chatting with you and your office, Stellan replied, moving from the door into the room. It would appear the surprise is no longer a surprise to you.
Nope,
Susan agreed. And will you be sharing why you didn't tell me she was here? Stellan asked, arriving at Six's side and claiming her instantly by putting a hand to her hip, and then sliding it around her back all the way to the other side, doing this, pulling her to him.
You said not to disturb your call, Susan answered.
Make a note, Susie, that in future, if Six is here, you disturb me. I don't give a fuck if the President of the United States is sitting in my office.
Note made, Susan replied.
Stellan finally looked down at her.
Hello, darling.
Oh, my God,
Susan cried before Six could even open her mouth.
You call her darling.
I am literally standing here, melting. Stellan turned back to Susan.
You do know what the word literally means, do you not?
You don't feel me, Stell. My feet are actually just puddles right now, she shot back. I don't know how I'm remaining standing.
Perhaps we should put you out of your misery,
Stellan suggested.
The misery hasn't yet begun, she returned. It'll start the instant you disappear, and then there'll be a stampede to get the lowdown on Six.
Then perhaps you should share with them that I'm considering revising the employee handbook to state that anyone caught in gossiping faces immediate termination.
Stellan replied.
Roger that, Susan said, beginning to move around her desk.
Stellan began to move them both toward his office.
Great to meet you, Susan, Six called as they went.
Right back at you, cool chick,
Susan returned. Stellan led her into the most kick-ass office she'd ever seen. All contemporary wood paneling, built-in cabinetry, and floors that went forever, plus recessed lighting and leather with hints of black, cream, and chrome. After closing the door behind him, he also led her right to his desk and around it. He pressed her slightly back, so she was leaning against the desk, before he took a seat in his chair turned her way. She dropped her clutch to his desk,
crossed her ankles and looked down at him, thinking only Stellan could be seated while she was mostly standing, and still seemed to dominate the situation.
"Everything okay?"
he asked, and she wanted to laugh because outside of "Hello, darling," that was the first thing he said to her. And he'd had an exchange with his beloved assistant, walked Six through his huge-ass office, and settled her against his desk in the time between.
"You're adorable with her," Six proclaimed. "She's adorable, so it's impossible not to fall into that,"
he returned. "She loves you more than breath," Six told him. His brows quirked.
"It's good to know she returns that sentiment.
I like her."
"I knew you would."
"I had a meeting with Joel this morning," she shared abruptly. "Not missing a beat," he murmured.
"I was wondering why the world was being treated to that charming skirt today."
She felt her lips curl up. "They have a case. Trial starts Wednesday. Two business partners who started things the best of friends, but it didn't carry on that way."
"Hmm?"
he prompted. "One of the partners is our client, and I've been tasked with digging something useful up that would prove he was correct about flushing his friendship and business venture down the toilet, then suing his ex-buddy."
"Yes?"
"I failed at digging something up. Mostly because I haven't tried very hard due to the fact that I've been wrapped up in what's happening with us."
"Ah,"
Stellan said on a sigh, sitting back in his chair, putting his elbows on the arms and steepling his fingers like an evil mastermind, except a wildly attractive one whose bones she wanted to jump and do that immediately. "I'm going to have to start up again with working nights, Stellan, and weekends."
"Of course."
She stared. He spoke.
"I'm delighted you gave us the time you did, Simone. But you have a job, you have responsibilities to your employer. You also have my house key, and your Cayenne is programmed to open your garage bay. If I'm asleep when you get home, all I ask is that you wake me so I know you're home safely. And if you need to work evenings, nights, and weekends, just share your schedule with me with as much notice as you can, so I don't plan anything when you need to be working."
"Easy as that?"
"I work a lot, Stellan," she warned.
"I do too, Simone. I also enjoy my work. If you became clingy and nagging and demanded I stop, this would make me unhappy. Why would I do something like that to you?"
"Men think about these things differently than women do."
"Not all of us."
She narrowed her eyes at him. "You know, you could at least try to be a pain in the ass sometimes."
He grinned. "Why on earth would I do that?"
She crossed her arms on her chest and looked down at her beautifully shod toes, muttering, "No reason." Stellan gave it a moment before he noted softly.
"You were laughing with her."
"We shared a few moments," she told her toes.
"How long were you in her office with her?"
She slid her eyes to him. "Maybe 5 minutes." He gave her a warm smile.
"She has that effect on people."
She straightened her head and looked at him directly. "I didn't pop in to be a pain. I was in the office. I'm not often in the office. And since it's close to your office and I had something to share, I decided to walk down and share it. But you should know I also came to meet her, so it wouldn't seem so heavy tomorrow night."
"That's perfectly understandable. And she obviously didn't mind, nor would I expect her to."
"I don't mind either. Ever. Anytime you wish to see me, I'll make myself available to you. To that end, we'll get you a pass card before you leave."
"I think Susan already has that going," she told him.
"I'll bet she does,"
he replied. "You're leaving last night alone," she noted, again changing the subject abruptly because he was leaving it alone, but she seemingly could not.
"There are things about you, Simone, that are yours. And they will never be mine to have, unless you choose to give them to me. Your sketchbooks, for one. Whatever occurred last night, another. I'm thrilled you're in my life. I'm delighted beyond measure to share my home with you, M with you, Susan with you.
If there's anything you want from me, need from me, and I can give it to you, it's yours. Materially, emotionally, my attention, my time. I'm fully aware that I've chosen a woman to spend my life with that is not, at this point, ready to offer me the same. I can wait. And honestly, Simone, if you never are, but you give me the beauty we have now, then that will make me far from unhappy. God. She loved him. Really? It'd be a big help if you could be a pain in the ass even infrequently. He dropped his hands to his lap and smiled. I should probably get out of your hair, she muttered. Actually, I prefer you pull your skirt up to your hips, your panties down, and spread your legs. Her heart thumped in her chest, her clit pulsed, her nipples instantly budded hard. Her lips parted, and her eyes stayed riveted on him. Susan, she whispered, knows better than to disturb us or allow anyone else to, but regardless, I locked the door. Stellan, I told you what I wish you to do, Simone. Please do it, he said low. Holding his eyes, she hesitated for a long moment, too, before she uncrossed her ankles, came up from the desk, shimmied her skirt up her hips, and then pushed her thong down them until it fell to her ankles. She kicked it aside and leaned back against the desk, bare-assed, and spread her legs. Stellan didn't watch her face while she did it. He watched her do it. She was so wet she was surprised she wasn't dripping down the inside of her thigh, not only doing it, but watching his face darken while she did. Like he had all day, he took his time getting up from his chair and moving to stand between her spread legs. Six stared up at him, positioned for him, exposed to him, and decided the beauty of Stellan surrounded by all that defined him out in the world was hot as fuck. She was certain he'd fuck her on his desk, and she was ready for it. In fact, the longer he stood over her, looking down at her, not touching her, she was tempted to beg for it. But then she couldn't hold back her gasp. When he dropped to his knees in front of her, shoved his mouth between her legs, and immediately commenced eating her. Hard. Her head rolled back. Stellan threw one of her thighs over his shoulder and went deeper. Amazing. She moaned and rolled into her. He began to tongue-fuck her. God, she whispered, lifting her head, looking down her body, seeing Stellan Lang on his knees before her. His dark hair and his broad shoulders and the shiny material at the back of his vest, all that between her legs, her white thigh thrown over one of his shoulders. Baby, she breathed, lifting a hand to drift her fingers into that thick, soft hair. He adjusted, sucking in her clit, but she saw his gaze catching hers along the length of her body. She locked her calf along his back so the trembling in her legs didn't take her off his desk. Eyes to hers, he drew hard at her clit, and primed by him just being him, giving her that command, doing this right there, how they were doing it. That was all she needed. Her body convulsed, her head fell back again, and she came in his mouth. She lost him and her purchase on the desk. When he lifted her up and planted her ass firmly to the edge of it, she heard a zip go, tried to focus, but in the grips of the climax he gave her, she couldn't, even when both her legs were yanked high and wide. With Stellan's hands behind her knees, he bent over her and drove inside. Stellan, she panted, her back arching, her chest pressing into his. Look at me while I fuck you, darling, he ordered. She righted her head and found his eyes right before his mouth took hers. She tasted him and herself, and it was the best taste in the world. He fucked her to another orgasm and then let go of her knees, allowing her to round his hips with her legs as he curled his arms around her.
one hand at the back of her neck, one arm holding her steady at the waist to take his thrusts. And he kept fucking her, staring in her eyes until he orgasmed quietly, with the veins popping in his neck by his temple, the hardness of his jaw, the depth of his claiming drives, as he fucked her through it, told her it was a good one. Six knew he hadn't fully come down before he was kissing her again, tasting her with his tongue, giving her his own, his cock planted to the root, and staying there. When he broke the kiss, he again caught her gaze.
"I've been wanting to do that since you walked down to breakfast this morning in that skirt. I'm glad I gave you an early opportunity."
He grinned, touched his nose to hers, and when he did that, a simple gesture but so goddamn sweet, Six got lost. Lost in the idea that this could be their life. Her, in the neighborhood, as it were, using her pass card to pop up and have a banter with Susan, a chat and a quick fuck on his desk with him. That she'd work, and he'd work, and she'd come to him asleep, wake him up to let him know she was home safe. Come down to breakfast wearing something he wanted to take off her. Down her vitamins every morning and listen to M chatter. But scars were forever, and hers were crippling. They didn't heal. Did they? "I might be late tonight," she said quietly.
"Can you meet me at the Gladley for a quick dinner?"
he asked. She nodded.
"I'll try. I'll let you know. If you can't, darling, that's all right."
She nodded again.
"Do you want me to clean you up, or do you want to do it?"
he queried.
"Do you have your own bathroom?"
"Of course."
"Of course.
Show me the way and I'll take care of it," she said. He slid out. She missed him the second he was gone. He helped her to her feet and pulled up his trousers, but didn't do them up, before he bent and nabbed her panties from the floor. He handed them to her, fastened his slacks as she yanked down her skirt, and then he took her hand and led her to what looked like just another wood panel on his wall. But when he reached to it, she saw the cleverly hidden latch. He opened the door and exposed a fabulous bathroom with beautifully tiled walls in mellow browns and grays, contemporary fixtures, and wood-framed cabinets covered in sliding doors of milky glass.
"Your interior designer really is amazing," she mumbled. "I'm very good at finding the very best of people, and when I do, holding on," he drawled in reply.
But she stopped dead in the doorway, turned her head his way, and looked up at him. His handsome face was soft, sated, and serious.
"Get cleaned up, sweetheart,"
he murmured, using a hand in the small of her back to push her into his bathroom. She went. He closed the door behind her. She found a pile of plush, thick, perfectly white washcloths in a cabinet. She cleaned up, put her panties back on, rinsed the cloth well, and hung it over the side of the sink. She then walked out to find Stellan standing behind his desk, looking down at a laptop open on it. He didn't have a PC, just that laptop. He also had a view of the valley spread out along the entire side of his office, where she could see Camelback Mountain in the distance. She moved to him, looking at the view, and only turned her attention to him when she had to skirt his desk. When she got close, he pulled her into his arms.
"I'll walk you to the elevators," he declared.
"I'm not sure your staff could handle that," she quipped.
"I don't give a fuck," he returned.
Before she could say anything, he bent to touch his lips to hers, and then he picked up her clutch, handed it to her, and moved them toward the door, not holding her hand, not curling her fingers around his elbow, but with his arm around her, their hips and legs brushing as they moved, his hold making it impossible for her not to curve her arm around him as well. His hair was slightly messy from her fingers being in it,
and he hadn't fixed it. Not that he should, as with everything Stellan, it was hot. It was too late to mention it when he unlocked and opened the office door and guided her through, not letting her go.
Six is heading out, he informed